Good morning. I'd like to thank APHA for this opportunity to present our research. I'll be talking about a study that we've been doing at Emory. It's looked at emergency preparedness among providers of medically vulnerable patients, and I'll be talking about the qualitative arm of this project. No relationships to disclose. I'd like to also acknowledge our funder, which has been the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and also to mention that the contents of my presentation are solely the views of Emory and not the CDC. Just a little bit of background about our PERC. Emory is one of several preparedness and emergency response research centers that have been funded by the CDC. We all follow the main IOM theme, which is to create and maintain sustainable preparedness and response systems throughout the U.S. public health network. Our Emory PERC is led by Dr. Ruth Berkelman. We have four primary research projects that are listed here. The one that is checked is the one that I will be talking about today. So again, our research project, the one that I'm a part of, is focusing on improving disaster planning in nursing homes, home health agencies, and dialysis centers. Our overall project has examined this issue through mixed methods and looked at the preparedness planning of all three types of providers, and I'll be talking just about the nursing home findings that we have. Our project overall includes an analysis of Medicare claims data and records to determine the impact of disasters on mortality and hospitalization rates among nursing homes, home health, and dialysis centers. The part that I'll be talking about in a few minutes includes interviews and survey research to examine preparedness planning among these types of providers. And also we have analyses to examine the legal and ethical obligations of providers to care for patients during disasters. I'd like to briefly acknowledge our research team. Our principal investigator is Dr. David Howard. Also Hillary Eyring, who's in the audience here with me today, is a senior research project coordinator and who really makes our project run. In fact, we probably wouldn't get anything done without Hillary, so we're really fortunate to have her as part of our research team. And Hallie Willis is also part of the research team and has helped us do some of the data analysis. So we've been talking a lot about today about nursing homes, just to give you a little bit more context about their role in disaster preparedness planning. Almost 2 million Americans live in the over 16,000 nursing homes in this country. The care requirements and fragile nature of these nursing home residents makes them extremely vulnerable to disasters and public health emergencies. And also, we've talked a lot about, all of us today, about Hurricane Katrina. It put a national spotlight on the susceptibility of nursing home residents during a disaster, as well as the lack of preparedness of nursing homes to deal effectively with their residents and staff during a time of crisis. As a result of this experience, as well as other emergencies that have happened throughout the country, we decided as Emory's PERC to dig a little deeper and talk with nursing home administrators to learn about what they do and learn more about their experiences during disasters. So our qualitative study had a dual purpose. First, to examine the disaster preparedness planning and evacuation experiences of nursing homes in two locations throughout Georgia and also in San Diego, California. And these two areas were chosen for cross-case comparisons, but also because they represent states and areas that have different and that are constantly under different threats of emergencies. Georgia, typically hurricanes, tornadoes, and wildfires, in San Diego, of course, earthquakes, but also wildfires. We also, the second purpose of our study was to inform the development of a nursing home provider survey, which, if time allows, I'll talk to you a little bit about. So we conducted semi-structured interviews with nursing home administrators as well as the Nursing Home Trade Association via telephone and in person. We also reviewed documents, and believe it or not, some of the nursing homes did provide us their disaster plans and gave us copies to examine. But also we looked at their contracts, which were typically transportation contracts, and any memorandum of understanding that they were willing to share. Our interviews focused on a few key topics. The first, disaster preparedness policy development, which focused on how and to what extent they had disaster plans, how they developed these plans, whether they did it internally with outside agencies' help, or, which was most commonly the answer, assistance from their corporate headquarters. We also looked at their preparedness training. That means training with the administrators, if they had any inside or outside training, also training of their staff, and training about this issue with their residents. We also looked at the preparedness planning and coordination that these nursing homes had with outside agencies, and those agencies were preparedness agencies public health agencies, safety agencies like police departments and fire departments, but also whether they had any coordination with area and nearby nursing homes or other community partners, such as churches or civic associations. And then we spent a great deal of our interviews with them talking about their evacuation experiences or their experiences sheltering in place. And then we asked them to talk with us about their lessons learned. So just very briefly, our analysis, the qualitative nature, we followed very standard qualitative analysis plans, which included a team that cleaned the transcripts, coded, and developed inductive codes, where we had descriptive analysis that were performed and initial results were presented via case studies and thematic summaries. So if you can read here, these are sort of the descriptive information we gathered from our provider interviews. Again, we had 16 interviews with the nursing homes and one with a nursing home association. Most of the nursing homes that we talked with were part of a for-profit and chain nursing home or were associated with a county or government or VA type nursing home. The second most popular type of nursing home we talked with were part of nonprofit chains. Very few of the nursing homes had full evacuation experiences. They were more likely to have acted as a receiving facility. Most of them had emergency transportation contracts, and those were with usually ambulance companies. Also, most of them had generators on site. In fact, in California, it's mandated by law that California nursing homes have a generator. Few of them, about 60%, I guess, had participated in disaster drills with local or state officials, but this included mostly fire departments, police departments, and very few participated in emergency registration systems. And we've talked about a little bit here. It's very hard to maintain these type of registry systems, and in Georgia, it's been a real issue about funding. They've tried twice now to get a registry system up and running, and it's been hard to get the buy-in. And then at the time of our interviews, which was last spring in 2009, few of the disaster plans of these nursing homes addressed pandemic influenza. I suspect that that's probably a lot more frequent now that we've had H1N1 come through, and many of them did have separate immunization plans, but they were not built into the overall disaster plan. So our findings are several main findings. First, are really grouped around this idea of pre-disaster policy development. All of the nursing homes we talked with had some type of disaster plan in place, and most of them had an all-hazards approach, which meant they really kind of went through a checklist of having a plan for, tornadoes, fire, hurricanes, even bomb threats. But most of them developed these with internal staff and little outside input. Many adapted their disaster plans from their corporate headquarters. So the pre-disaster planning occurred with very little input from outside agencies, such as emergency management officials and fire departments, as well as public health. And few of these nursing homes actually shared their disaster plans with these agencies. Training, most of the nursing homes had training in some sort of form, like fire drills and tornado drills. Some facilities reported taking part in tabletop exercises or other state or county trainings. A lot of the nursing homes had some sort of training with their state nursing home associations. And we found that government-affiliated nursing homes conducted more training than private nursing homes, and a lot of that was because they were required to do so. Communication with outside agencies, again, was very interesting. Nursing homes are more likely to have regular communication pre-disaster with departments like fire and police departments, but less established relationships that existed pre-disaster with emergency management officials. Communication with other nursing homes about disaster preparedness was hampered by competition and simply a lack of opportunity to collaborate with other nursing homes around disaster preparedness. But we did find that communication among nursing homes improved post-disaster. Many nursing home administrators just simply reported that they didn't know about outside resources. They didn't know about medical operations centers or emergency management agencies. They just didn't know how to reach out to those types of agencies. Among communication with their staff, usually their staff were informed about the disaster preparedness policies of the nursing home upon hiring or through in different drills like fire drills and tornado drills. But interestingly, staff members are expected to report to duty during most of the emergencies and disasters. But we found that, and as nursing home administrators recognize, that these staff have their own family and personal responsibilities. And so because of that, it hampered a lot of their ability to show up during the disaster. Some facilities, interestingly enough, took special time and made special privileges for the staff's families to stay in the facility during the emergency or disaster. And we saw that nursing homes would put aside a special apartment for the staff's family. They put up cots. They recognized that the staff had other responsibilities, but they tried to accommodate that as well. Communication with residents' families. Most nursing homes inform family members at the time upon admission, and family members are generally expected to take residents, to take their family members back during a disaster or evacuation. We found there was less family involvement and less expectation in facilities that served lower income members. Transportation. Most nursing homes contracted with ambulances or school buses for transportation in case of an evacuation. Some, the larger nursing home facilities, had their own transportation. The administrators that we talked to acknowledged that there was a potential to have ambulances and school bus either commandeered by the county or not available due to the overlap in the company's own commitments with other nursing homes. And we found that the evacuation and shelter in place experiences were quite varied. There were informal relationships with other administrators and disaster preparedness officials that played key role in the evacuation that occurred. And facilities in areas under constant threat, namely those in California, appeared to be more prepared than those that are not. So very briefly, I'd like to sort of give you two separate stories of evacuation experiences, one in Georgia and then one in San Diego, and show you some common themes but very different experiences. Both happened, strangely enough, in 2007. And in Georgia, in spring of 2007, there was a wildfire that occurred and took place over 2 months and destroyed 100,000 acres of land. It was the largest and is the largest wildfire in the history of the state. Over 6,000 people were forced to evacuate, and one nursing home came within hours of having to evacuate. This nursing home was notified by the county EMA, the Emergency Management Agency, to review their disaster plan and to get ready. This nursing home had a contract with school buses and ambulances. However, they were commandeered during the experience. The school buses were used to take home school-age children, and the ambulances to take community members home. It ended up with only one ambulance being available to take the over 20 ambulatory patients that nursing home had. So there was a real breakdown in communication, and the transportation contract that they had was basically null and void. And in San Diego, again, wildfires were the main major disaster. Over a million people were evacuated, 2,100 homes were destroyed, and 9 people died. 14 nursing homes were evacuated. That's over 1,200 residents. And again, many of them medically fragile. Many of them were evacuated to non-health facilities, again, something we saw from Katrina. They were evacuated to Qualcomm and Del Mar Fairgrounds. While there were many nursing homes that were unaffected and had available beds, but there was no communication among the nursing homes to facilitate that type of transfer. There was one nursing home that, because of its established relationship with the nursing home, was able to transfer its patients quite safely to another nursing home. And as a result of that experience, built what we call the area coordinators model. And it is a model that I'll talk about really quickly that allows administrators, or that requires administrators that sign on through formal agreements, to basically be in charge of about 10 to 12 nursing homes in case of a disaster. And that nursing home area coordinator is really in charge of communicating everything from evacuation to sheltering experience to number of available beds. So this system, this area coordinator's model, has been used to adapt other models of care, such as residential care and assisted living. I'm not going to go through the provider surveys. We're still rolling those out. We had about a 30% response rate, but we're finding some common themes, and we've actually expanded to Florida as well. But this, I want to just leave you with sort of the overall findings, and this is a quote that came from General Russell Honoré, who was the general in charge during Hurricane Katrina, and he was bombarded by a lot of the media who said, okay, what's your plan, what are you going to do? And his plan was, well, yes, we've got a plan, but don't confuse the plan with execution. Basically, disaster plans and transportation agreements are not enough to prepare nursing homes for potential disasters and evacuation. Communication is key to effective disaster preparedness. That communication needs to occur among the staff, among nursing homes, but also among nursing homes and disaster preparedness agencies. Experience helps. It shows that it helped during our interviews, but collaboration is essential. And the last sort of take-home message we have, and here's a very familiar picture at the bottom that we've shown several of us. during our presentations here. But the take-home message is, while we think in more traditional, perhaps immediate terms of how to keep nursing home residents safe, prevent falls from spills, as shown in the first picture, for instance, there are far more serious consequences from not preparing for disasters. Disaster preparedness must be a central part of nursing homes' conduct of business, from safety planning to communication among staff and residents and their families, but also among outside agencies and nursing homes. Nursing home residents are among the most medically vulnerable, and so they are a population for which we must be the most prepared. Thank you, and I'm happy to take questions.
We have time for one question. So,
even though our typical emergency, the nursing home fire, somewhat aware that many nursing homes do have drills.